heed the new apocalypse.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Set Lusting Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. Joining me from the cold weather of Jersey, and I just shared with him it's going to be 80 this week in Dallas, and he may just dislike me a little bit. Diego, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's great to speak with you again.
Yeah, tell us a little about yourself.
I am a singer-songwriter from New Jersey. Most recently, just got into film scoring. I did my first film, an indie horror short called The Mankineel House, which is going to hopefully be in some horror movie conventions later this year. Excited to get a chance to share that with people. It was such a fun project to work on. And I also own and operate an audio production business here in the Garden State, El Sueño Studios.
Yeah, and you joined me, wow, it's been a while, back in 21. And so we had reached and was like, hey, let's catch up. And so I'll include the link to our earlier discussion. But talk to me. My first question was to ask you, what have you been up to? How did you get into the film score? How did that happen?
I put out my first album in 2012 called Roses and Broken Hearts. So during COVID with the lockdowns, I was supposed to put out my sixth album called Diego FM 84.6, which is all 80s synth pop style stuff. And I was looking to do a live album. And of course, with all of the closures, entertainment, we were the first ones out and the last ones back from COVID. So getting to do a live album didn't happen. And with the 10-year anniversary of my first album coming out approaching, I said, you know what? I'm just going to do a best of instead of a live album, which would have just been the same thing anyway. It would have been mostly the same songs live on stage in front of an audience. So what I did was I recorded it sort of like a live album, in the sense that it, if you listen to it with headphones, you sound like I'm playing right in front of you.
Oh, okay.
So the best of 2012 to 2022, it's my 18 best tracks. And if you buy it from my website, diegoa.net, you get 3 bonus tracks, all from 2 outtakes from my 2013 Magical album, which was the very Springsteen album that I had put out, and a version of a song off that album called Mary Lou, which is very different from the actual recording. It was my original, I think it was a re-recording of the original demo that I had for that song. And so I put it together, I put it out. And afterwards, I'm like, I've been making music for 10 years. I put out 6 albums. I have a 7th I'm working on. And let's be honest, I'm not as good as Springsteen and McCartney and all those guys. And I'm like, most people would say that they only made 7 or 8 really good albums before their work got a little hit and miss. Now, I'm not nearly that good, and I'm at 6 doing 7. So I started thinking, like, what else can I do musically? So I started my own business last year, where I am now a front house engineer for a few tribute bands here in the area, and I'm getting more business over time. I'm thankful that I'm starting to become successful in this. And one of the ideas I have might be fun to try scoring a movie, because a lot of what I draw from inspirationally is Eric Serra. If you ask me who my biggest influence is, I'll say, I won't say Springsteen, as right. much as I love Springsteen. I'll say Eric Serra, S-E-R-A, who is the French composer who did Leon the Professional, La Femme Nikita, GoldenEye, Fifth Element, most of Luc Besson's films. As problematic as he is, the music has always been incredible in those films. And in his song, Experience of Love, I will listen to it sometimes hour to 90 minutes on end, on repeat, and just get transfixed by it. Just sitting there dissecting every little piece that I hear, trying to let the entire song wash over me. I've never had an experience like that. So I said, let me try doing the film scoring. And I just put some feelers out, and somebody kicked back and said, yeah, we'd love to talk to you. This incredible female director here in New Jersey, Christine Jansen from Beautiful Darkness Productions. And it's a wonderful little 10-minute film. Really, it's really scary at one point. And she was very open to some of the ideas that I had and some of the things that I did within the score. And when we did the second draft of the score, and she didn't ask me to really change anything. She would just be like, add a little to this and embellish on that and give me like, she guided me to her vision of the film, which made it so easy to work with her. And so I absolutely loved the experience, and hopefully this isn't the last time that I'll get the chance to do something in cinema. So I'm just looking for other ways to be successful in music. I'm also the lead guitarist and harmony vocalist. I am the Niels Lofgren of a bar band here in New Jersey called Shore Traffic. And you'll catch us in and around Monmouth County at different times. You can find us on Instagram, Shore Traffic. I love that band name. It's a great group of musicians that I have a lot of fun playing with. We don't play any Bruce yet. I keep trying to nudge him towards Roll of the Dice because I think that'd be a fun one to play. But we haven't had any Bruce yet, but we play a lot of really good, fun, danceable stuff. And Sherry's an incredible singer. She has a great Donna Summer. We do a 1-2 punch of Hot Stuff into Bad Girls.
Yeah. Oh, that does sound fun.
Yeah, so it's like a 10-minute disco thing, and it's so fun and slightly unhinged, which I think is absolutely wonderful. I think you need to be a little unhinged to be a good musician.
I agree. I think absolutely. Did talk to me about scoring the film. Did it use different muscles for you? What talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, because like most of my music is, if I'm not doing an acoustic folk thing, I think of songs from my 2018 album, This American Life, which was compared to Nebraska when it came out. It's probably my most successful streaming album, which on Spotify. That's a lot of there's a song on it called Coal Miner, which is, it's 8 verses that switch off from the husband's perspective to the wife's perspective, back and forth 4 times. So that song, it's the verse, and then there's a little harmonica section in between every 2 verses. So it's an A and B type thing, but it doesn't really change. You just hear instruments come in as time goes on. Or it's very anthemic pop rock. I think of a favorite song of mine to perform, even though I've only really done it a couple of times due to COVID, is a song called Dance Tonight from Diego FM, which is just really fun. Somebody online compared it to the Hooters and We Dance.
Okay, sure.
Which is a really fun song from the 80s. And I'm like, that was such a compliment.
Yeah, that's a great compliment. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a first chorus and all that stuff. And there's sometimes a little B section in between, and which is a very Springsteen writing tactic, is to have that little B section between the verse and the chorus that kind of builds the tension.
I see you lying there with tears in your eyes. So scared of living, too scared to die. Sense the loneliness that haunts you in your dreams, and how sick you are of all the played out movie scenes. Lights, camera, action on another day wasted, and that cup of media brush for your Monday motivation. This is our time, this is our chance to let go.
This was very different. This is with filming. I think it was Bill Conti. I heard explaining his score for the Bond film that he did. He says, film goes left, you go left. And I didn't understand it as a teenager when I first heard it, but now I get it. You're trying to follow the action. It's the weirdest thing. You want to be completely invisible, but felt. When you're writing music, so it was a very different muscle to try and create something that could be eerie and not so much scary, but just make you feel uneasy. without going overboard. So I started thinking not just Eric Serra being my main musical influence, but I started thinking about what John Williams did in Jaws. It's two notes.
Yeah.
And that two notes is the shark for the first two thirds of the film. Until you get to the third act and you finally see it, it's two notes. That's the shark the entire film. That's all he needed to make you feel uneasy about what was in the water. So with that, I just started paring it down and paring it down and paring it down. What could I do? What could I do to raise the tension? More rhythm, less melody. Staying very much, the whole film is, it's only 10 minutes. It's all in one key because they bought one of my songs for the credits. A song called Don't Let Me Sleep Alone. That song is in E, C sharp minor. So I started in C sharp minor and then climbed up the scale. So in each key, you have six chords you can choose from. So I start on the sixth with the C sharp minor and went from the minor second, F sharp minor third, A flat minor to A major, B major, which is the four and five, climbing back into the sixth C sharp minor for the end of the film. Because I wanted the film to feel like it rose as it went by. And that was one of the ideas that I had. And Christine was so open to that idea, thankfully. And it did work where we did little things. And you'll hear the music accenting what the characters are doing and just trying to build anticipation and build suspense and just keep you feeling uneasy the entire time. And it was so fun to use those different muscles, because you're not trying to, you know, when I wrote Dance Tonight, I was trying to write something that was going to make people dance. I wanted it to feel like something that came out of a jukebox. I wanted it to feel infectious and undeniable. With this, it had to be something completely different. So you're trying to think of music in different ways when you're scoring a film.
And I love the idea, right? You're talking about how did he put it? You need to be recognizable, but it also, give me that quote again.
You have to be invisible and felt at the same time.
Yeah. And that's a very thin line to draw. But if you think about, you mentioned Jaws, I'm thinking, you know, the Love Actually, one of my favorite scenes.
Oh, such a great movie.
When he's going to go to the cafe to confess his love, right? And the score is just so upbeat. And I did not know this till I had rented Castaway on DVD, and I was listening to the commentary, and they talked about that they had no score the first half of the movie, that any music was coming from an other source. And then when he escapes the island for the first time, that's the first time you hear the score, and it lifts you. And one of the things that stuck with me, I was watching a documentary on, and Bill Walton and Kareem were talking about Coach Wooden, and he said he used to say, be quick but don't hurry.
Yeah.
And I love that be invisible but felt. That I could see how that would be a really fun challenge as a musician. And also, right, to you're serving someone else's creative vision. It's not your vision, your ideas, you, and your role as guitar is Neil's in this band, right? I am serving the band as vocals and harmony and guitar, and to help someone else beats their creative vision has got to be just really a nice, fun change of pace.
It is. It really saves me from the unending BS that I put myself through on my own. I've literally gone nights without sleeping over one lyric. Lot 25 was the band that I fronted. Back in the day, we only did the one album together, Eden Boulevard, in 2016. But the keyboard player, Brian Morelli, who co-produced Eden Boulevard with me and played drums on it as well, brilliant musician. I remember him telling me one day, there's a moment where I got really scared during our time together where I thought I was going to show up at your house and you were going to be playing piano in a sandbox.
Thank you, Brian Wilson.
Exactly. What's that great Steve Van Zandt line from his song Love Again? I got a picture of Brian Wilson that I pray to every night.
Yeah. I don't know if you've watched Jason Isbell. They did a documentary that HBO put out, and there is a scene where him and his wife, Amanda, are arguing about, is it a hotel key room or the hotel key room or key hotel room? And he joked about it. If we were doing rock and roll, if we were doing dance music, we wouldn't be spending this much time debating over one word. So I get it. I get it.
You know, it's just how many people have argued about whether Mary's dress sways or waves. And the funny thing is that doesn't change the song whatsoever. And I would say neither is more poetic than the other. It's really an argument over Bruce's enunciation, which in the early days wasn't always the best. He has gotten better with that over time. So that's really where the basis of that kind of argument comes from. But I'm talking about, I used to agonize over whether a line should start with well and or but.
Yeah.
For no reason. And even though it really would change the lyric, at the end of the day, you have your message, you have what you're trying to say, and artists need to trust themselves a little bit more and trust their audiences. And really where that comes from is an insecurity, because when you grow up as a creative person, you grow up usually weird and getting told to not trust your instincts, to not be who you naturally are, to you're different and that's wrong, be normal. And that's really where that a lot of that comes from. But I don't think you could be an artist, a true artist, without going through that misfit upbringing.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
I do agree. I know that Kevin Pollak did a documentary about comedians, and it was all about that, the non-humor behind it. Yeah, and it is, I remember Michael Myers in an interview talking about someone, why do you want to be a comedian? And he's, or I wanted to be an actor so that people would love me. And he says, I think that's what all of us do that for. And it is, there's a lot to said that. So I absolutely get that. Yeah. Misery Loves Company was the name of the film that Kevin did about comedians. But yeah. All right. I am so glad that we are getting to catch up, but I don't want to bury the lead. You have a story that you emailed me and said, I want to come back to catch up, Jesse, because I always have fun visiting with you. But yes. I have a story I want to share. So go for it, my friend.
Yes, the Vinny Lopez story. When those Vinny Lopez, former drummer of the E Street Band, now Rock and Roll Hall of Famer,
yeah,
is a local musician here in New Jersey, performs out a lot, is a fixture, usually in light of day. So this was like early 2013. Okay. I was playing lead guitar. I was the Niels Lofgren for another songwriter for about 6 or 7 months while I was still putting the finishing touches on my first album. We were playing Light of Day at the Asbury Angel Show. And I remember that specifically at the Stone Pony because Mark Ribbler was doing a live recording of his song Asbury Angels that night. And I got thrown up on stage door because I was holding percussion instruments because they were looking for something for Vinny to go up and like a tambourine or something. And he was using mine for it.
Yeah.
And I had a bunch of other instruments like, God, get up on stage. And I'm like, of course, I'm going to do what I'm told.
Yeah.
I'm the new guy here. I'm not going to be a jerk like that. So I'm standing next to the keyboardist, Mark Ribbler, with a shaker and a cowbell. And I'm trying to pick up the harmony for the chorus to sing with them. And Arnie's like looking up at me and encouraging me and smiling big. And then he's such a good guy. That was later that night, but earlier was the set that my band, the band I was playing in, On the Something, was playing. And we called Vinny up. He came to do Hang On Sloopy with us.
Oh, how fun.
This is, for me, is the best story. They're setting up his microphone. Lead singer's giving him a huge introduction because it's Vinny. And this is like 2 years before he made the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I just start on my guitar playing the opening chords to E Street Shuffle. Bum, bum, ba da bum, 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 ba da ba ba.
Yeah.
And as I'm going to give him his E Street introduction, from behind me, I hear on the hi-hats. And Vinny's now playing along with me. And we both ended at the same time. I turn around, we're just smiling at each other. And he looks at me and he says, young man, I remember every part of every song from those days. And then we did Hang On Sloopy together. And he, of course, remembered his parts and fit in the band expertly. And so it was just this really great moment where I got to see his history with Bruce and the band come alive in him. And there was like this sparkle in his eye as he smiled at me. And Vinny's such a great guy. I always treasure when I get the chance to see him. And he's always been very nice and accommodating to me when I'm done. Because I'm still the young guy down there.
Sure.
So he's always been very nice and accommodating to me when I've been down there. But that's a story that I like to tell Springsteen fans.
Oh. It's like
that history is still very much alive within these musicians.
So what I find interesting about that is I was lucky enough to have him on my podcast. He was episode 100. It was several years ago. And I asked them, was there anything you're tired of talking about? And he said, only thing everyone wants to talk about is me leaving the band. And I said, okay, then we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, and he talked about how much he loves singing. And just, we got into a lot of other stuff, talk about how much he loves golf when he's a caddy for one of his friends, and just a wonderful, sweet man.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I did say, though, is there one album since you've left the band that you go, wow, I really would have liked to have been on that? And he said, all of them. And that's the closest he got to being wistful. Or he is very much a positive man. But hearing that, yeah. And he told the story that He was complimenting Max once after being on a show. And Max says, man, I'm just following your lead. So I think they're, and I'm so glad that because of them getting in the Hall of Fame, he's had this new awareness, right? That people, like he says, he gets invited to golf tournaments now and it's stuff. And so I'm so happy because I just truly think he's just a great guy. And I love that story. I love that he lit up doing that. That was sweet of you to share that. That's great. That's really good.
It was such a fun moment. And if I'm trying to make a living doing purely music, not just my own, touring and playing with other people, yeah, hopefully more session work and all kinds of production work and stuff like that. So I'm trying to make a living in doing that, especially in Jersey where it's really expensive. It's hard, but
yeah.
At the end of the day, it's, you know what? I've been on stage with members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I've held my own. I can always put that in the away in the bank. I'm so grateful that I've had the opportunity to do things like that, to really know, hey, you know what? Even if it doesn't work out for you, you were good.
Yeah.
You had the ability. It wasn't a lack of talent that kept you from being successful, and I can definitely live with that. And Vinny was always just really kind to me, and I hope I get the chance to see him again soon. Him, Bacha Galoop, really just a nice group of guys. Eddie Testa, always very willing to let young musicians hang around and teach what they can to us. And I probably wouldn't be able to do a lot of the things that I do now musically had I not had exposure to that older group of musicians over the past 25 years or so, and just hanging around Asbury Park.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. And yeah, well done. You should be proud that you can hold your own. I did want to do a little Bruce catch up. Did you make any shows in the last tour?
Yeah, I was at MetLife for the first and the third show. I had to work the second show, but I was able to be there for the last night, which was it was really good. The first night blew me away, like just the energy of the stadium, the energy of Bruce and the band. It was palpable. That first night was incredible. The third night was really good, but you could hear in his voice, like he must have been in some pain that night with the ulcer.
Yeah.
Because if you listen to the recording, you could hear just a few moments where he seems like he's either not, I want to say struggling, because it wasn't that he was out of key trying to sing into the upper range of his voice, but like pushing for it was painful for him in some way. And that being the last night of the, everything got canceled after that because of the ulcer. I got to think he was in pain that night.
Yeah, I bet
a little
he
bit.
Was. Yeah. What were your, there's been that share of controversy about him not changing the set list up a lot. Any thoughts on the two shows you saw and how much you enjoyed them, or your thoughts on it?
Yeah, the first night I was glad to see what, because I missed out on the arena show earlier in the year, which I really wanted to, because I wanted to see what the show was. I always enjoy seeing the early part of the tour, the show that gets him out on the road. And then there's the party at the stadium afterwards where things get to switch up a lot.
Right.
I thought initially that part of it was maybe with COVID restrictions, it was a little harder to do rehearsals and sound checks to get everybody, because it's such, and now he's got the singers and the percussion player and the, I'm pointing around the room like people are going to see this.
Yeah, and, I got you.
And the horn section and everything, including his, it's East Street's what, 10 musicians now, right?
Yeah.
And then you're expanding that to even to more, well over a dozen. And so I thought maybe that was part of it. I thought it was disgusting because I had heard rumors that it was because Roy was suffering with dementia and could only remember certain songs. I thought it was disgusting that was ever entertained as a possibility.
Wow.
I think Bruce had something very personal he wanted to say, because it reminded me more of Tunnel of Love.
Yeah.
And that tour was very static for a long time. And I just think Bruce had something very deeply personal he wanted to talk about on stage, and this was the first time maybe since The Rising where he had a very definite show, a very definite idea of what he wanted to do. And he wanted to, I guess what everybody talked about, the expense of the tickets too. It was like, if that's going to be an issue, we're going to make sure it's tight and right every night. And we're going to make sure it's well rehearsed and thought out and planned out and make sure they're getting their money's worth. And I thought that was part of it. I didn't think it was a bad thing. I didn't think it was something that people should have been so up in arms about. Because at the end of the day, you go to the artist for their, like, people don't come to see me play anything when they come to see me. They come to see what I'm going to do. What do I have to give to them? As an artist, I don't have that the sales numbers are as fortunate as I've been to have been streamed and sell the amount of records I've sold. I don't get that crowd who's showing up because they want to hear my backlog of success. No, they're coming to see what I have to present for them now. I think the success is a double-edged sword where people are showing up because they want to hear Glory Days and Dancing in Dark Corner and all that stuff. And I showed up because I wanted to see what Bruce had to say. What did this great artist still have for us? Because he still has something viable to say. He's still a viable artist. And so I wanted to see that. I did think that it was odd to me that he talked before the album came out. He said something, and I might get this quote wrong, but he said something, oh, we had this great album of songs. They're going to sound great on stage. I can't wait to take them out on the road. And he's only playing a couple of them a night. I thought that was strange, but at the end of the day, it was like, I get it. He's got something he wants to say here. I do think it's going to change in 2024 with the passing of his mom. I think he's going to have something to say.
Yeah.
At some point about that. He's not going to veer too far away because I don't think it does veer too far from the original premise of the tour. But I think you will see some changes in 2024 to that set to accommodate something regarding his mother. She was too much of a presence at the shows in his life and a positive presence in his childhood. And always encouraging him, as far as I know from the stories he's told, buying that first guitar for him, like it says in The Wish. So I think you're going to see something. You'll see something. It won't be a major change, but you'll see something.
I would love if he would do The Wish. He did it for Broadway. He'll know what to do. I was okay with the set list. I've been very vocal on this podcast about, I believe that seeing Bruce perform live is a gift. And maybe if I'd seen him hundreds of times, maybe I would have a different feeling, but I don't think I would, because I have a fun time every time I go see him. But I was a little disappointed, not angry, that like when I saw a Wrecking Ball tour, he was doing 5 or 6 songs off Wrecking Ball, right? The Rising, he did 5 or 6 songs.
And he was doing more than that in the early parts of those tours. He was doing 7 or 8 of those. And then songs eventually dropped out as it went to stadiums. I guess some songs didn't play as well in stadiums.
Yeah, so I do agree that would have been nice. I would have, because I love that album so much. Now, I got lucky. I got in both in Houston and Austin. If I was the priest, but I would have loved Power to Prayer. I would have loved Burning Train. I would have loved a few more songs on there. It would have been great. But
I think Janie and Rainmaker are two sleeper songs on that album. First of all, Janie is always a great song. And it's really, I think it would be powerful if performed. And Rainmaker, I think, is still topical to what has been going on the past 15, 20 years, and especially right now. It felt like maybe a missed opportunity to update that, because Bruce always talks about part of his show should always be a political rally. There should always be the presence of that. And I thought it was a missed opportunity to add something new to that part of the conversation that he has with his audience, while not missing out on what he's always done, which is there's always some commentary about the country in his set. night to night, and without being too overt as well. And I know he didn't want that to be the case this time around.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, so I do think it's going to be interesting. Do you have any tickets for this upcoming year?
Not yet. I want to see what happens, because I've heard mumblings and rumors locally, 3 to 5 shows at MetLife.
Okay.
Labor Day. The week, if you look at the schedule, there's a 2-week gap between Philadelphia and I forget what comes next, like DC or whatever. Yeah. And so I'm hearing maybe 3 to 5 shows at MetLife around Labor Day. So I want to see what happens, because I'd rather have to drive, because I'm closer to that stadium than I am to Philadelphia. As much as I'd love to see him in Philadelphia, I would want to get a hotel room.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if it's just going to save me money, I think in all the same, I'd rather go to MetLife, because it's home. New York, New Jersey's home.
And I will tell you, I've only been to the one show there. And every time Cowboys play the Giants, my son, one, jokes about they have really good popcorn.
Yeah.
And two, how great the sound was for an outdoor arena. Like how clear everything was and how it did not feel like the band was miles away, even though they were, right? But with the screens and the atmosphere, the energy, it felt like an intimate show, even though it's an arena show. Yeah.
And I have to give it up as an audio engineer and a guy who does front of house mixing to Bruce's audio people, especially, because they always do an incredible job. And I actually, it's funny, because the first night at MetLife in 2023, I had both the fortune and misfortune to be completely side of the stage in obstructed view, but I was right next to the line array speaker column. So on the quieter moments of the set, like when Backstreets falls down and he goes through his little thing, I heard the line array at the back of the bowl on a 7 or 8 second delay. Because for those of you who don't know, the reason why you would delay those speakers is to give the sound from the stage time to get there before those speakers push out the exact same thing. And the reason why you're doing that is those speakers are not meant to necessarily be heard. They're there to replace frequencies that have dissipated over that distance. Usually you lose low-end frequencies first, because those waveforms are much wider and they wave so much slower, right? Each frequency, 30 hertz is 30 cycles per second. And as you get higher in number, you get faster. That's why it's easier to hear a guitar from 50 yards away than it is to hear a bass guitar 50 yards away, because those low frequencies disappear very quickly.
Interesting. Okay.
So they're there to supplement the sound from the stage so that you get the full frequency of the band and everything that's happening at the back of the bowl. That's why they're not that loud. But if you sit at certain sections like I was, you will hear them 7, 8, whatever it is, seconds later happening against what's going on stage. And it just sounds like an echo. So it's funny to me to see, as someone who does audio, pro audio now, to see that in action and how that works. And I could tell you, as somebody doing front of house, but even in a bar where you're only playing to a room that's maybe 40 feet long with a band, it is a battle to get that low end heard at the back of the room. Sometimes I got to do it without subs. The band doesn't have subs and they don't want to pay to rent subs. And so they're looking at me to have the answer. Here's the answer. Drummer, hit the kick as hard as you can. Bass player, turn your bass up. And the loudest thing coming out of the speakers is going to be the kick in the bass. Why? Because at the back of the room, you need to be able to hear something of it. Even if you don't hear a lot of it, you want to hear something of it. And even at 40, 45 feet, that's a battle. Yeah. So these guys got to do it with a whole stadium. I don't envy their job. But that's why they're making the big bucks.
Yeah, and it's so well done. I was sitting there And historically, I've been told I've never attended a concert at Jerry World, the Cowboys Stadium, but I have been told by people who've gone that the sound there is horrible. I was just
I
really
gotta think it's that
impressed.
big screen. I gotta think it's that big screen.
I think so too. His, as he calls it, his Visio board, because that's Jerry. That's awesome.
But you'd be surprised how environment can change something, because I've been to Madison Square Garden where it has that really weird roof that seems to dip down at the center. And it sounds incredible in there. Yet you went to the Meadowlands Arena to see Springsteen and it was terrible. And all you, like my ears, even with hearing protection, was piercing high frequencies as I'm going to leave, because the way that roof curved and the metal it was made out of just kicked the high frequencies back at your head. It was like punching you by the end of the night. So you'd be very surprised about where you sit to see a Springsteen show and the environment that you're in and how it affects your experience hearing Springsteen's music. Where I would say if you've seen him a couple of times, you know what that shtick is, what that sit closer to the stage on the sides if you can. And then just listen, because
You know,
it'll completely change your experience.
and I do think that he has the reputation, and I've had enough people on the podcast that have been gone to sound checks of him making sure the sound sounds good. So that's cool. Diego, so this has been so much fun catching up. So what's next for you? What's next on the creative thing? You got, you still working on trying to do some other stuff? Tell me a little bit about it.
Still trying to find work as a session musician and producer and mixer for studio, doing my live mixing, hopefully more movie scores. I'd love to do another. I'd like to do something like a quirky romantic comedy where I don't have to do the big orchestra thing, and maybe I can a quirky indie film might be fun to do where I'm doing different things. So that might be fun. I'm working on a seventh album still and still trying to write songs. I might at some point stop making albums because I don't want to put out a bad one. I don't think I've ever put out a bad album. I think they've been different degrees of good in the last three, and the best of have been excellent. I'm really proud of that work. And if you're going to listen to, if you don't know my work, go to the best of first. It's 80 minutes of music, but it's the best 80 minutes that I have to give. It's the best of me as an artist, a producer, an engineer, and a performer. Go there first. And then when you see what part of my work that you like, go and visit that album. It's a great introductory to me as an artist. And then hopefully this new album, when I find it, I think I'm going to hold on. I wanted it for this year, because I thought it really feels like an album for 2024 and some of the things that are going, but it's got some really universal themes of resilience that I think it's worth waiting to really get it right. So it might have to get pushed back, because I don't want it to feel like anything I've put out before. I want to search new sounds, and I bought a guitar. I bought a Fender. It's actually a Squier Bass 6, but for those of you who remember Shane Fontaine with Better Days, Bass 6, it's a bass guitar, but he himself, we were emailing earlier this year, he told me that his was strung up like a baritone and tuned in standard tuning, but A to A instead of E, a fourth up from a bass 6 usually is tuned E to E, an octave below guitar. So this would be like capoing it on the fifth fret. And using baritone strings instead of bass six strings. So I said, okay, I brought it to my tech, had him string it up like that. And I was able to play Better Days and Leap of Faith and Living Proof and all that stuff. So I'm like, okay, that's kind of part of the sound that I had in my head. And I didn't realize it was a baritone because there's not a lot of information about that kind of stuff out there as it pertains to rock and country. It's mostly baritone people are usually metalheads. So there's not a lot of info out there for guys like that. And when you hear about the bass six, you tend to think of Wichita Lineman. Glen Campbell used the bass six for the lead on that, but as a bass six and not as a baritone. So once I started experimenting with that at a jazz master, and I started finding all new tones and bought a few guitar pedals. So I'm trying to new. That's my thing right now. It's just new sounds, new vibes, new songs, a whole new thing. But I think I'm going to push it back to make sure that I really get it, because I want it to be an elevation in every way and not just this new kick. I feel like there's a bar I set in my mind I haven't quite reached yet, and I know that I can exceed it if I give myself a little more time and figure out how to make the guitars work the way they do in my head, and it'll all fall into place. So look out maybe next year for a new album for me. But you know what, just follow me on social media. I'm always making content. I go live. I do this thing for Blow Up Radio, which is a New Jersey internet station, where twice a year they have a benefit, usually one in the spring, one in the fall, for different charities. One for the National Foundation for Transplants, which is coming up next month in March. And then there's one for the Spondylitis Association of America every October. And I do, with backing tracks, a full band set.
Oh, nice.
Of original music. And every now and then I'll throw a cover in. I think last year I did Frankie. Because I do a nice live version, live full band version of Frankie. I think I've done Badlands in the past too. Yeah. I keep backing tracks because it's an easy way for me to practice my parts for if I do put together another band or reassemble Lot 25 in some way, to practice what I have to do. So when I go into rehearsal with the band, I can shape them. So it's nice to be able to keep on top of my stuff, because I have to know all these songs for the band that I'm playing in. And when I get hired as a session musician for other artists, I have to learn their stuff. So it's nice to keep on top of my own stuff as well, so I don't forget. So I use the backing tracks for that, because with COVID, we couldn't get together and do the benefits in person. So keep an eye out for that, blowupradio.com in March. I don't have the dates yet. I know they put out the press release with the dates, so it'll probably be on the website when that stuff is going to air.
Okay.
And so it'll be fun. There may be a nice cover and a brand new unheard song from me in there. Every now and then I throw one in just to keep people guessing.
When you're ready to promote the new album next year, you got to come back. As always, I love visiting with you. If someone, you mentioned social media, if you tell everyone how they can follow you and how they can hear some of your music.
The best way to follow me is to follow me on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at Diego Music NJ. It's the same address on all three. I try to make myself really easy to find. My website is diegoa.net. The best way to hear my music is because I'm not a major label artist. Guys like me don't make a lot from Spotify, even when Spotify does pay us. Like they're trying not to right now. I remember telling somebody earlier this year, one of the bands that I work with who does nothing but covers, I said, how much do you think I would make if I got 1 million plays on Spotify? Mm-hmm. And they were, it's $6,000 for 1 million plays for me as an indie artist. And that's just as the artist. I as the songwriter and the rights holder, there would be other money that I would be entitled to.
Yeah.
But just as an artist, for 1 million plays in Spotify's, probably making a 90% more than that.
Yeah.
So I always ask people, please go to my website, diegoa.net, purchase my music, and you get bonus tracks for everything that you buy from me. Yes. If you buy a single song, it's only $1. You get the FLAC and you get the MP3 together for the one price. So if you want to put an MP3 on a phone, or if you're old fashioned, you like to put it on a drive, something like that. You have the MP3, it's not going to take up a lot of room. And it's from the direct master recording, so it sounds great for an MP3. And then you have the FLAC, if you like FLAC, if you like lossless audio, well, you're getting them both together. Instead of having to choose, you're going to get them both together from my website and bonus tracks. And the prices are almost the exact same that you would pay to Amazon or iTunes to purchase the music, except you're buying it direct from me. So I would appreciate people would just go check it out. And I recommend the Best Of as the place to start. If you want to get familiar with me and my music, it's my 18 best songs, the best 80 minutes of music I was able to come up with at the height of my talent as a musician, as a producer, as a mix engineer during the COVID lockdowns, scrambling around trying to get all 18 songs done. And I recorded more than that. So there's three bonus tracks for that as well. And that's it's a great place to start to get acquainted with me as an artist. And yeah, go ahead and follow me on social media as well. If you're on TikTok, I pop up on live on TikTok. Sometimes I'm changing strings. Sometimes I'm sitting playing guitar in my home studio and learning songs. So you get to see me fumble my way through Play That Funky Music, White Boy.
Nice. That brings me back to my days at a high school dance. So very nice. I will do that. I will include links in the show notes. I appreciate you so much. I love hearing the Vinny story. That made me smile. I'm so glad you shared it. Name of the film again, so we can keep a lookout at for like horror conventions.
So it's called The Mankineel House. If you follow Beautiful Darkness Productions on Instagram, they will let you know when it is ready and where you'll be able to see it. I know you'll be able to watch it online too if you can't get to a horror convention or a film festival. It should be available at some point this year online. So go ahead, shout out to Christine over at Beautiful Darkness Productions. It absolutely wonderful little film. And if you're a horror fan, I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Everyone put a lot of hard work into it. And I think it came out great. For it's not 100% finished right now. I think it's going to get finished this week. But the like 95% done cut that I got the chance to see, I thought it was excellent. And I think people are really going to enjoy the work that everybody did on that. So I got to give them some love and a shout out. And I know there was, before we sign off, I know there was a question you wanted to ask me about Thunder Road, right?
Yes.
I want to make sure we get to that.
Yeah. I end every question, every episode with the Mary question. And so Jay Armstrong, who was an honors English teacher back in the day, he's now retired, but he would give his class the lyrics to Thunder Road. They would study them, they would read them, and then they would compare it to Robert Frost, The Road Not Taken. And then he was asked his class, does Mary get in the car? So that is your question. At the end of Thunder Road, does Mary get in the car?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It because the song isn't about whether or not she gets in the car. The song is about the journey from the sidewalk when he parks to the front door to ask her. It's in that moment that he makes this decision, this character. I see the world as a much larger place than this small town. I don't fit in here. I don't like it here. I'm going to go out into the world and find my place in this much larger community that I wish to be a part of. The song is an invitation, as Bruce says. So it's not necessarily important whether or not she joins him, whether or not she gets in the car, because it's about this character's journey between, I hate it here, and that's it, I'm getting the heck out of here. And there's a desperation in his voice that he wants her to go with him. But at the same time, he's already made up his mind and he's gone. So I'm not even sure if the character really cares whether or not she gets in the car. I think he wants her to, but I think he's leaving regardless. But sometimes, and this just might be the artist in me, the journey matters, the destination doesn't. And it's more about getting to that point to where you're going to get out of town than whether or not she goes. And that might be like the weirdest, most artsy thing you might ever hear about this question.
But I think it's a great answer. And no, I love it. I think that's perfect. That is great. Diego, as always, I love visiting with you. Thank you, my friend. Continued success. Good luck. And if there's anything I can do to help, you let me know. Let's keep in touch and let's have you back on when you're ready to promote the new album. All right.
I'd appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on. It's great to speak with you again. And you got to come visit us in Jersey, man. You got to come,
yeah,
you gotta come
to
the shore one of these days.
Absolutely. All right. Listeners, go check out the website. Go throw a little coin his way. You'll enjoy the music. For now, be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye. Thank you for checking out this episode. If you enjoyed our discussion, I hope you will check out other episodes of the podcast. I've spent over 7 years talking to hundreds of music fans around the world about the power and magic of music. Please follow me on all my socials. I'm still on Twitter, aka X, as Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is at Setlusting Bruce. The show and I are both on Facebook as well. I'm a part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. I am part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. Both Perfectly Good Podcast and Setlisting Bruce are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, where there are dozens of great podcasts about music. Charles and I talk all things Doctor Who on Next Stop Everywhere. I'm joined each week by Lou and Karen on Last Best Hope for Conversation as we discuss Babylon 5 and other pop culture topics. This show can be reached at setlustingbruce@gmail.com. And I would mean the world to me if you could send me feedback on any of the podcasts. Or please reach out to schedule time for you to join me on a future episode. Getting to talk to people about their love of music and their favorite musicians and other creative endeavors is a passion of mine. And I hope that the conversations bring you a little joy, a little love, and a whole lot of light.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.